Excuse me. Hi, this is John Amundson. I want to welcome you to the next podcast in the series of podcasts. I'm sure you people hear me cough a lot on these podcasts. It's really interesting. A guy in the University of Alberta, a respirologist, I'm assuming, has just done research on winter athletes. That is people who run for fitness or run competitively, and cross-country skiers. And what he's found is that exposure to cold greater than minus 15 and repeated exposures can lead to permanent lung damage. And this permanent lung damage is what I've referred to it as exercise. Well, I haven't. My respirologist I worked with called it exercise-induced asthma, and I'm a good example of that. So I have this condition, I'm sure, that I have created that is permanent, where from time to time I use a Ventolin inhaler. Now, unlike asthmatics who might have to use steroidal Advair or Ventolin every day, I use it episodically. I use it if I'm competing in something, or if I do cough a lot, to prevent that becoming creating receptivity for a virus, and then even bacteria, I'll use the puffers in. But anyway, we're not talking about that, are we? Or we are talking about that, apparently. So if I cough once in a while, you say, see, you have an ill-spent life, you pay the price later on. What was it? When parents used to say, if you keep making that face, it might stay that way. All right. But what I wanted to do today was look at the Psych Monitor and kind of almost read to you guys that they put out every year in December what have been the top 10 journal articles that have been downloaded. And these are from their journals. There are 89 journals that APA publishes and 4,500 articles. So these are the top 10 that have come down this year. All right, the one. It's entitled Therapeutic Relationship in Cognitive Behavioral Therapy, Essential Features and Common Challenges. And this was in Practice Innovations. And I was kind of chuckling. It was like saying, hey, you know what? We should probably deal with the relationship. And it's an essential feature to cognitive behavioral therapy. We always tease the cognitive behavioral guys because we'll say, you're going to put us out of business. There'll be a robotic simulator if it's that easy. All right, so they discovered the relationship is important. Another one. Number two, this was in Psychotherapy, Volume 56, Number 1. I won't give you all the details. Therapeutic Strategies and Techniques in Early Cognitive Behavioral Therapy. And they have said there are three main strategies or three main thrusts to succeed. Agreeing on the purpose and goals of treatment, developing a collaborative therapeutic relationship, and initiating an objective self-monitoring of behavior. So in other words, they too are saying, you have to be able to have a good relationship with the patient, good skills. Number three, the development of goal-setting theory, a half-century retrospective, and this was in Motivation Science. And the two authors are people, a couple of guys, they are men, who have been doing this for 50 years, and I don't know much about goal-setting theory, but they talk about the idea of having well-defined goals, good feedback, motivation around those goals, etc. The fourth one, it was in the International Journal of Play Therapy, and it is Child-Centered Play Therapy for Healing, Children Exposed to Domestic Violence. And they say, the authors say, Play is the natural language of children, allows for deep da-da-da-da. So I don't see that was an empirical article, but maybe kind of a theoretical and high face validity driven phenomenon. The other article, the fifth article, and then we'll take a little break, sex difference in serial killers. And it was in Evolutionary Behavioral Sciences. And they looked at 55 male, 55 female serial killers. These are people that have taken one or more life. And they found that male serial killers hunt. They talk about hunter-gatherer predisposition. And that male serial killers, they tend to hunt, stalk, look at unfamiliar victims, often with a sexual motivation, where they say female gatherers, female serial killers, see, males hunt and females gather. That, sorry, I didn't put that together for you very well. That the female serial killers gather victims, killing relatives and vulnerable others close to them, usually for a monetary gain. Okay, going to the second five, I took a little break. You guys didn't. This just plays straight through to take a quick look at them, so I'm not, you know, getting into a da-da-da-da because I don't understand something. The sixth one is risk factors for child sexual abuse victimization and meta-analytic review. And this is probably a pretty cool one because it was in the psych bulletin. And they extracted, I'm going to go through their protocol just to demonstrate why I like the psych bulletin. They looked at 765 risk factors from 72 studies and classified these into 35 risk domains. And then a series of meta-analyses identified a significant mean effect for 23 of the 35 domains. Here are the strongest effects. Prior child sexual abuse victimization, and or victimization of siblings, prior victimization of the child other than sexual abuse, and having a parent who has been a victim of child sexual abuse. So all of a sudden, you know, we were kind of, I think the original research said only about one-third of parents who have been physically abused or sexually abused will go on to abuse. So this factor, that one-third factor, becomes more robust, and I may be off on that one-third, but I think that was, between 10 and 15 years ago, that was sort of the research then. Some of the other things, though, that are associated with child sexual abuse include living in a non-nuclear family structure, having a parent who experienced intimate partner violence, having a chronic physical or mental health condition, and being female. Number seven. Early intervention in CBC with depression, they looked at a case study with low adherent and highly adherent process. By adherence, I mean people that have much quicker uptake to the structure of the therapy. And this was in psychotherapy. They look at a therapist's adherence to protocol. I didn't mean to imply adherence by the patient. Adherence by the therapist to the protocol. And what they found was that even where there's as low adherence to the protocol, there can be effective outcomes that take place. So again, this is a little bit of that, and we're teasing the CBT guys, a little bit of that, gosh, you mean if I don't do the manual-based protocol that exists, people can still get better. The next article, number eight, is in developmental psychology. Emerging behavior problems, biodirectional relationship between parenting temperament and infant temperament. And they did a longitudinal study of about 200 mothers and 151 fathers, and they found that mothers with a more authoritarian parenting style had infants with greater capacity to regulate their behavior at 6 months. And mothers with more permissive parenting styles had infants with less capacity to deregulate. So in other words, being a little more structured, a little more authoritarian, small a authoritarian, turns out to help the kids regulate. And then they found out there was higher infant regulatory capacity and negative affect at 6 months. Regulatory capacity and negative affect 6 months, to greater maternal permissive parenting style at 18 months. All right, so the kids that had higher regulatory capacity but negative affect, that predicted that the mothers would be more permissive later at 18 months. And this is the bidirectional aspect of this. I guess that makes some kind of sense. Number nine, early childhood depression, emotion regulation, episodic memory, and hippocampal development. In the Journal of Abnormal Psychology, they found that past depression or serious depression in children or adolescents inhibited or created episodic memory deficits. And these four things, depression, the severity of depression, marked depression, not just transient or developmental, emotion dysregulation, the behavioral expression of a dysregulated sort of behavior, life stress and adversity, and then there was slower hippocampal growth with that. Episodic memory is ability to recall specific events that have taken place in someone's life. And so sometimes when we see these kids in child welfare files, just to editorialize a little bit, you would say, so tell me a little bit about when you were going to that other school. And they go, it was good. Meaning the ability to have a deliberate, effortful and reflective capacity seems to be diminished relative to those series of events in kids' lives, this sort of dissociative quality, maybe around events in general. But that idea of episodic memory then is not as good for those kids. And this would have ramifications in all sorts of areas and learning, I guess, and everything. All right, let's go to the last article. Cultural interacts with other elements of an organization to drive success. And this was in the Journal of Applied Psychology. The Journal of Applied Psychology is one of the journals I review each month, and it's organizational psychology. And I don't know that I've done any articles out of that, maybe because those things just don't strike a note with me. But this is the 10th most downloaded, and it's found that an organization's culture, and what they mean by culture are the shared social beliefs, values, and the norms, has a moderately strong relationship with other important elements of the system, the organization's system. And so when they're trying to make changes, system is the structure of the organization, the hierarchy, the leadership, the work practices, all of that kind of stuff. When you're trying to make a change to the culture, you have to take those other things into consideration. And this would probably, it seems kind of, if you're going to bring something new in the culture, let's take this idea of power differential. And like when you say, we hereby, from this point forward, person in a role of leadership will have a personal or an intimate relationship with any subordinate, like the thing that happened with McDonald's. You can read the symposium article I did on that. So all of a sudden, power differential is being taken very seriously. That's a change in the culture. However, if you're looking at the working patterns, the hierarchy, and the other ways in the system that have been there, if you're not looking at those, and you find that there exists patterns that would bring people into proximity, or there has been a pattern of unduly close collaborative, I don't know what to talk about here, but that if you don't take those into consideration, you won't change the culture. But I think that seems self-evident to some of us, but maybe I'm not getting it. Speaking of not getting it, you have been kind to stick with this for coming up to 14 minutes. So let me just find something to play so we can get us all out of here. Thelonious Monk, straight, no chaser.